but 11 is the one that was, of course, the most exciting, if you will. And of course, I was, during 11, I was at my AGC support council there, and they did have some comm dropouts during the start of descent, but they didn't, and as I recall, that was, when you listen to the voice leaks, and as I recall, that was kind of expected, you know, things mm-hmm. happen. All it meant was that the ground couldn't see the spacecraft. It didn't mean the spacecraft was in trouble.
Yep.
And fortunately, it was truly just a dropout. It came back, so the ground was able to monitor everything, basically throughout the landing phase. Now, of course, where I got 15 seconds of fame, which is sort of crazy, was on those program alarms that happened. And that's an interesting story. About a month before the flight, we'd done many, many, many simulations, and they're very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting in mission control, hooked to a motion-based crew trainer with visuals and all that. And this is in the 60s. I mean, it was kind of Rube Goldberg. I mean, the view out the window was a camera that flew above one of those plaster Paris landscape things. but it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
So the crew was in the spacecraft, and they did all their stuff, and they had simulated Apollo guidance computers with the software in it, and we saw in the control center exactly what we'd see in flight. Very realistic. We did lots of them. Well, about a month before the flight, they did one last one. Well, I don't know if it was the last one, but they did one where I had played both sides. I was, because I wasn't part of the mission ops group, I was really part of developmental. The simulation guys, who were the ones that injected problems and errors just to get the team to respond, they asked me if I could provide something that was a computer software glitch. So I did. And believe it or not, it was one of these alarms that can't happen, one very similar to it. And so was playing both sides. I'm supposed to help resolve the problem, but I'm the one that that suggested it. Anyway, play acting's no problem. So it happened. But the guidance officer, Steve Bales, when it happened, he didn't ask, and he called for an abort. And they aborted that simulation. That is, the lunar module ascent engine was fired off the descent stage in mid-flight to abort. And I want to tell you, it was gruesome afterwards, because Gene Kranz, who was the flight director, started really getting after the simulation folks, because they didn't want an abort on a simulation so close to the real mission. And the sim guys said, that wasn't supposed to be a abort.
Mm-hmm.
You were able to survive that with no problem. So a lot of introspective thinking there. And but I remember Gene Kranz came to me and said, I want you to study and write down every possible program alarm that can happen, whether they can happen or not. Because these particular program alarms were put in there for programming. They just didn't take them out. They were meant to help test to make sure that the computer cycling time was adequate to do all the guidance and control. So I made a little checklist. In those days, we didn't have computers to type, so we drew everything by hand. But I made a checklist, which You may have a copy of it. I'll send you a link to it if you don't. But it was very, very high level. It was sort of a cheat sheet on all the approval arms and what the reactions could be. So I had that under the plexiglass in the desk light flat area on my console. And so when the alarms happened, I studied them. I mean,
yeah,
this is just a cheat sheet. But so when the alarm happened, I told Steve Bales that it was okay to proceed as long as they didn't recur too often, because all that was happening was that what was happening was the computer was not finishing one guidance cycle before it was time to start another. And this happened when the guidance cycle, as they approached the lunar surface, went from every 2 seconds to every 1 second for finer guidance and control. And so when that time to start before you're done happened, all the computer did is flush all the processes and restart them instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that cleaned it out, that built space. And fortunately, the computer was running just a little bit over 100%, so it wasn't continuous. And the engines and all that just keep firing at the last place they were at if there's a very short delay there. So it really was no problem.
You could hear the concern in Neil's voice, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Of course, the crew, they're sitting up there when those alarms go off. You know, like in the movies, in a submarine, when the klaxon goes off,
yeah,
and they dive, you get a loud, loud sound, and it draws your attention very quickly to the display and keyboard, the disky, to see what alarm it was, and that's where Buzz Aldrin was reading down the, tell me about this 1201 or 1202 alarm, and we did, and it was fine. But I'm quite sure, I mean, everybody thinks that's what caused them to sort of lose place of where they were over the lunar surface, which was, all's well that ends well. Oh, one anecdotal thing that was funny there was we had a couple of the alarms, and then later we had more, and it was a different number. I don't remember which came first, 1201 or 1202, but whatever one came second, when it happened, I didn't wait. I just said, same type, we're go. And I heard Bales say, same type, we're go. Heard the Capcom say, same type, we're go. It was like an echo for me all
yeah.
the spacecraft. That was pretty funny.
And it all sounded amazing, amazingly professional and confident as well, the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you get this sort of mixture of, is it real or am I in a simulation? Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was you react because you've been trained.
Yep.
You know, you sort of forget everything except what you've been trained to do and practiced to do over and over and over. In fact, in speaking of simulation versus a real thing, that was another one of my aha moments as they approached the lunar surface, because the calls we heard from the crew were the same. It was like listening to a play, you know,
mm-hmm.
except for problems that we had to solve during the sims, but during the nominal parts, they always did the same calls. We saw the same kind of data. And except on the landing, the real landing, as they approached the surface, Buzz Aldrin said, we've got dust now. The decent engine was kicking up the dust from the surface. He'd never sang that song before. That was sort of a, oh, my God, it's
yeah,
really happening.
It is.
Another, I mean, we knew it, but it was one of those, well, hello.
This is it.
It's really happening.
Yeah.
That's pretty much my story on the Apollo 11. I Though I could say that another funny story, I heard the MIT guys were on a connected line to his telephone line,
mm-hmm.
but it was always on. It was a dedicated line to MIT from the control center. And they told me later that when those alarms happened, they all looked at each other. Not a single one of them knew what it was. Not one.
Gee.
And it turned out, and I didn't think about it till later, but evidently I was the only one on the planet that knew what they were.
that's amazing, isn't it?
But again, the thanks for that really goes to Gene Kranz.
Yeah.
He told me to prepare.
Yeah, he did a lot of forethought, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of an obvious thing to do. I don't want to get in trouble with this kind of alarm again. You go figure out what they all are, Jack. But
yeah.
Still, that was the motivating step to get me to study up.
So yeah.
That was good.
Well,
what else you want to talk about?
What about the lunar liftoff? The guidance computer had to change the coordinate system, I guess, to being stationary?
Well, I mean, they were in the lunar coordinate system from the time they, just like Apollo 8, from the time they
yep.
were closer to the moon, gravitational pull. So that
okay.
was, everybody was in lunar-centric, the ground, the lunar module computer, the command module computer, they all did, all were 000 at the center of the moon.
Okay, yeah.
So that's, no change.
Okay.
That's the way they powered up. And while they were on the surface, they figured out the reason for the problem with the alarms. They didn't want to have those kind of alarms during ascent. And sure enough, it was only a design problem. They had to switch in the wrong position. The rendezvous radar. There were two radars on the lunar module, one looking down the descent radar and one looking up ascent. And the of course, the ascent radar was mounted on the ascent stage. And it was designed to help them rendezvous with the command module when they lifted off.
Mm-hmm.
And so in case of abort, somehow the decision was made to not have to turn that ascent radar on while you're aborting. Let's turn it on while we're descending, so it's ready. Unfortunately, there was a grounding problem of some sort, and the analog to digital converters would wander, white noise, up and down. And there was no direct memory access on a computer in those days. What they did was every time the analog signal would change by an increment equal to one bit in the computer's memory,
mm-hmm.
the the computer would actually get interrupted and add or subtract one bit based on what direction it was going.
Okay.
So what was happening was the computer was continually getting interrupted and adding and subtracting and adding and subtracting and, meaningless. It would just wander up and down and up and down. But it stole, 14-15% of the entire duty cycle of the computer. And that's what bounced it up from 85-86%, which was nominal during these 1 second cycles of guidance. That's what bounced it up to just over 100 and caused one cycle to not complete before the next one was time to go. So that understanding all that eliminated it as a problem during ascent, so no problem. That was, while they were on the surface, there was a lot of hard work to figure out and assure that it wasn't some sort of generic thing that could get us in trouble. And of course it wasn't.
You hear a lot of people talking about how powerful the guidance computer was, and people say, well, my wristwatch has more computing power. How would you describe the guidance computer?
Well, the 12 microsecond cycle time was pretty slow compared to today. I'm not sure a watch comparison works, but I can certainly tell you that any smartphone today walks circles around the capabilities in terms of computing power. But in terms of failure, that computer was hard to beat. There was only one of them in each vehicle, and they were built to be to not fail, and they didn't. Now the memory was, the memory is what's amazing, people. We talk in gigabytes today. We used to talk in megabytes. Long ago, we talked in kilobytes. And I don't know, the computer, the laptop I have in front of me right now, I think it has 8 gigabytes of RAM. The Apollo computers had 2 kilobytes of RAM, random access memory. And that's tiny. There was also another 40 kilobytes, I think it was 40, of rope memory. Mm-hmm. Rope meaning what they did was, you know, they used these magnetic cores for memory in those days, and the word length of the computer memories was 16 bits. Today, you think in terms of 8 bits, so when I say 2K memory, it was really like 4K comparison. If I say 40K, it was like 80K today. But at any rate, they'd run 16 wires through each core or around each core. And so if you can picture this long, long stretch of 16 wires and cores strung along them with the wires going, some of the wires going through, some going around. And what they did was pulse the core, cause it to change magnetic direction, and that would cause a pulse in the wires that went through the core and no pulse in the wires that didn't. And that's how they read, that's how they were able to pack 16 bits into one core.
Very clever.
And, yeah, and of course, that's, today they call it, you know, I think that's hardwired. Hardwired code. Mm-hmm. They don't even do that anymore. But I'll tell you, when it was time for a cutoff on the final software version, that was a physical thing. They had a bunch of weavers at, you know, women that were good at sewing that they wired those ropes at Raytheon in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once they did it, it's very hard to undo. But those ropes are what is where the software was, and the 2K of random memories were, you know, things that changed data, if you will, was kept. So that was how all that worked. But in comparison, in memory, it was tiny compared to. I mean, heck, my, you know, you can't buy a smartphone with less than 8 gigs, I think. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, we, and of course, you know, there's a megabyte is 1,000 kilobytes and a gigabyte is 1,000 megabytes. We're talking factor of a million there. But, in those days, the, programming was, still possible, very tight. It worked. I mean, lots of issues during development, of course, there are. In any big program like that.
So it would have been written in machine code, in assembly language?
Yeah, it was all assembly language. Well, they had a higher level language built in. It wasn't the kind that was that you compile. It rather was a set of subroutines written in assembly that were list processed when it switched it on. What I mean is, rather than having instructions in a memory cell, they would have a jump to one of these subroutines. And that, it was pretty slow, but that was the way they could do matrix arithmetic and all that kind of stuff. And when you looked at the listing, you actually saw it doing what looked like much higher level processing than you'd see in assembly language. And then, of course, that, that was one of the gimmicks or tricks or absolutely astounding technology things that they were able to do to squeeze more processing capability into a computer like that.
Mm.
Again, it made it run very slow, but the idea was you only had to have the computer send updated commands for positioning the engine bell that was firing, or RCS or whatever, reaction control system. You only had to send a signal to tell it how to fire every couple of seconds. And just a couple of seconds is a long time when you have, even when you have a 12 microsecond cycle time, which is very long by today's standards. But, you know, today we think in terms of much, much faster machines and much, much faster cycle times. We think in terms of the computers responding to us almost in an analog sense. In fact, they do. You know, when you're typing on a keyboard, you watch the mouse move as you move your hand.
Yes.
That's instant response, not 2 seconds. Different world.